I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Miracle Voices. This is your co-host, Matt McCabe. I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. I'm so excited that Jackie is on with us.
Me too. Welcome, Jackie Laura Jones. How are you doing?
Hey. Hey, Matt. Hey, Tam. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. Love what you guys are doing and so great. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Lots of good energy for early in the morning.
I feel low energy compared to you, Jackie. I don't mind saying it. You're a bolt of lightning.
Well, this is so funny because I did do a short walk this morning and then I came back and I thought, this is so great that this is audio because I don't have to like do anything but just like relax. So maybe the fresh air outside, you know, got me going. So,
yeah, you can stay.
Well, remember, we are all one and we see you.
That's right.
Remote viewing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Remote view. Well, that's a whole nother topic. Yep. We get it. Love it. Love it.
Well, Jackie, a great place to start would just be to hear how A Course in Miracles came into your life.
Yes. Well, oh my gosh, the big blue book, right? So let's see. I'll kind of shorten it, but, in the 90s, I was married to this wonderful man named Tony, and something intuitively was just telling me that the relationship was kind of coming to an end. I've always been really intuitive, and it's been a blessing, but it's also been kind of hard because I'll kind of see things like way down the line, right? And then the physical has to catch up, you know, with kind of what I see psychically. So I didn't really see a future with us. And I knew it was kind of time to end that relationship. And what was so difficult about that, you guys, is because sometimes you end something because of something bad, or you're really like fighting a lot with your partner, or something happens. And, you know, Tony was just a great guy. And I just had this thing, I thought, gosh, my karma with him, I just feel that I really need to be out in California. I was in Chicago with him at the time. So we separated, him and I, and I came out to California. My mother and sister were already out here. And my sister's roommate at the time, so it was in the late 90s, mid-90s, was moving out. And so I thought, oh my gosh, this is, you know, kind of meant to be. And so I came out, moved in with my sister, Cindy. And it really just kicked off that kind of really following my intuition at that age and making a big step like that of leaving a relationship from a good person. You know, we had 6 years together. I considered him really a really, really good friend. So I started the spiritual buffet line out here, you guys, which I was just reading like Shakti Gawain and Wayne Dyer, and the Men from Mars, Women are from Venus came out, and just, you know, all these authors. I guess Deepak Chopra was in there, and everything was great, and I loved it. I felt a strong connection to Wayne Dyer, and read, you know, a lot of his books. And then my sister and I would go to this bookstore called Bookstar at La Cienega over here in Los Angeles. And I would pull the blue book off the shelf, Course in Miracles. I'd look at it. I kind of like turn the first couple pages and I would like put it back and then buy something else. Right. And then I'd go back to Bookstar, you know, looking around, whatever, pull the blue book off, you know. Well, at one time I did buy it. And I also bought this little book by Karen Casey, and it was something like 365 daily meditations on A Course in Miracles or something like that. And I was reading that, and it really got me to thinking, oh my gosh, there's two ways to look at things. That's so interesting. I always thought that growing up, but I, you know, she was saying, okay, the ego, this, and the Holy Spirit, this, you know, and everything. And I thought, well, this is so interesting, because I always thought there was a part of my mind that was kind of just like observing what was going on. I kind of was aware of, you know, two different things going on. I didn't have any really reference for that. So that was really the beginning of it. And I read Karen Casey's book. I was doing those lessons. And then I started to tackle the big blue book. And then fast forward to 2004, I picked up Disappearance of the Universe because my mother had been going to a course study group out here in the Pacific Palisades, an area in Los Angeles. And Disappearance of the Universe was on the coffee table. I guess it had come out the year before, but, and she brought it home, and she and I were always having, you know, these metaphysical conversations. She'd been doing the course before I was, and we would talk about it. And I would say, there is something going on this world. I cannot put my finger on it. And she brought Gary Renard's book home and said, this is what you're saying, this is what you're read this, it's gonna make the course clear or whatever. And Gary Renard, who is my brother-in-law now, who was not my brother-in-law at the time, we didn't know him, and so we were all reading Disappearance of the Universe. I said, oh my gosh. And it really brought the dreamlike nature to the world, because my mom was reminding me, she goes, you used to always say that something's going on here, this is not, it's not right. It's not, I couldn't get it. You know, I was like, I just don't think this is, I mean, I know this is not our reality, but what is it? Right. And so then fast forward. So then, you know, Gary's book introduced me to Ken Wapnick, and I was off and running with Ken, which then obviously Ken, Judy, wonderful Judy. Oh my gosh. And then the introduction to, you know, through reading about Helen and Bill. So that's kind of how that, like, you know, all came together or whatever. And yeah. And so I've just been, it has helped me, you know, my husband, Mark, now who I've been with Mark for 13 years, he used to ask me in the early years, what is it? What is it about the, I said, you know what? I just feel peaceful. Mm-hmm. I just love it. I said, I feel at home. I feel just good. It helps me through the day. And I just have been with it ever since, you know?
Yeah. Wow. That's wonderful backstory. It must be quite a Thanksgiving dinner or get togethers with you, Gary, Cindy, and some, your mom's into this. You guys, yes, really got a lot of, you can bounce a lot of ideas off each other that the average person can't.
Matt, this is hysterical. I'll say a couple things about that. Also, my husband, Mark, was into the course, and his mother, my mother-in-law, who has been doing the course since the 90s. It's really weird. So we are surrounded by it. And so, yeah, it's funny. We're a very normal family because obviously we just talk about like normal things or whatever. But yes, we do. We can, you know, get going and share our experiences. And we kind of just know in our mind when we're all talking, you know, kind of, well, what's really going on, everything. But just very normal. Yeah. But we do get to share, you know, experiences. And it is an interesting experience kind of being around everybody who you kind of know in the backdrop in their mind, they're practicing the same thing you are, right?
Okay, let's get to your forgiveness story.
Yes, I'd love to hear that, Jackie.
Yes, well, there's so many, but I will, so many forgiveness stories.
Your greatest one.
All right, I'll give you a big one that's not, there's so many so personal ones that I don't know if I have permission from the people to say those yet, but so I'll give you a big one. This one, which was really big, I think, because finances are sometimes a big trigger for my husband. And that's the whole story, but I'll tell you this. So we own a couple rental properties. So one of our rental properties, we had a tenant. This was in 2019 that she had missed a rent payment. Okay. And so we thought, oh, okay. I mean, this happens. I mean, we're not. So next month goes by, you know, missed another payment. And so we called our property manager at the time because this property is out of state. And so we have a management company that helps us with that. And so we call her and she's like, oh, that's odd. Let me just see what's going on. So she came back to us, the property manager. She said, wow, your tenant, and I'll just say Anna, call her Anna. Anna's really having an issue right now. And it's really sad because her son passed away and she's also waiting on funds and, you know, this and that and the other thing. And I thought, well, gosh, okay, well, we kind of vetted her before we took her in as a renter. So, you know, everything should be okay. So another month passes. Mark and I are just busy and we're not like sticklers. I mean, we want to give people a chance. You know, we know people go through hard times. We don't sit there and, you know, watch these things like a hawk, you know, but I was just going over the banking and everything. I thought, wow, it's like 4 months. It's going to go on 5 months without rent. I'm like, I'm just not sure that that's, even though we didn't financially need it. I thought, well, the principle of just maybe having someone just not pay and we don't know what's going on. We thought, well, her son just passed away and everything. Let's be sensitive about this or whatever. So we called the property manager again. We said, you know, you haven't even kind of been keeping in touch with us, which is odd. And we haven't called you either, but you know, are you on top of this? Is everything okay? And everything like that. So, oh my gosh. So we find out through the channels, we had her do some investigating. And as it turns out, the woman's son had not passed away. And our property manager couldn't get into the house. And we were like, what is going on? You know? And so, you know, 6 months goes by, whatever. She's like, well, she knows a congressman really well. And they're trying to get her these funds. And we know, you know, she lied about her son, but everything should be okay. And it sounds really weird. Like, Mark, like, well, why didn't you take action? When you're in the moment of it, I mean, we really wanted to give her the benefit of the doubt, you know? And so finally it got to be, you know, 7 months, you know, all this was going on. We thought, you know what, we, it's just not like healthy on both ends. And the fact that you, the property manager, we'll just, you know, call her Martha or whatever, you, Martha, can't get into the place. We really need you to go over there. We really need you to go to the property. I mean, it's a home. Mark lived in there years ago. It's an, you know, nice place. We just need to see what's going on. So she goes in there. I don't even know how to explain it. It would look like if you're on a movie set and you're trying to make everything look as trashed as possible. There were dogs in there. We didn't approve the pets. We always approve pets when people ask, but it just requires a different deposit and stuff like that. The walls, everything was, I don't even know how to describe it. Stuff all over the walls. The floors were damaged. The kitchen, because she took pictures, Martha, our property manager, we'll call her Martha, took pictures. Everything, it was almost like it was purposely trashed. The carpets were ruined. The bathrooms were ruined. The toilets were clogged. The windows were broken. The blinds were, I mean, she took like, you know, 50 pictures or whatever. And we just thought it was so surreal. We're like, what happened to our house that was built in 2006? I mean, everything was more, you know, relatively new or whatever. And we thought, well, this is a problem because our property manager didn't was afraid to go in there because there were like big dogs. And we thought, well, how can she still be living in there? We don't know what's going on. We didn't want to do an eviction that would be like an arrest or something like that. So I guess there's a softer eviction. I'm just drawing a blank of what it's called. It's a different type of eviction. And Mark and I were on the phone at the time. I'll tell you what the irony of this is in a minute. But we were on the phone and he said, you know, I just got this hit. Obviously, she's in dire straits. Let's just offer her debt forgiveness. Let's just say you don't owe us 8-9 months of rent. If you can just vacate, you know, we'll let you vacate and whatever. She wouldn't go. And so we thought, oh my gosh. And so, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of damage in the house and everything. And so we're asking about it and everything like that. And we got the hit just to do the softer eviction. So our property manager had to go over there with someone and physically take her out and give her a place to stay or whatever. Fast forward, we find out from our property manager that she was never like vetted properly and that she had problems with her renting to her earlier. And we didn't even know this. And we were like, oh my gosh, we might have been able to avoid this whole thing. So here we're forgiving the tenant, we're forgiving the property manager, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of damage. But for some reason, and finances had been a trigger for Mark. It's a story for another time, not because he wasn't abundant. He's always done well, but he always had this fear of losing things or putting too much out there. Like, are we spending in the right place? Whatever, that type of thing. He's very good with just managing money and stuff like that. So the irony of this is, this whole thing is going down while I'm at a course conference in Boston talking about forgiveness. I wasn't a speaker at that conference, but I went because I always know a lot of people there. They've, you know, either read my books or they're clients. And then, you know, it's a good way to just spend time with Gary and Sin. We kind of make a little outing out of it or whatever. So I just went to this course conference and was talking to people. And this whole thing was going down. I thought, oh my gosh, if I was speaking about this, I could share my process of Mark and I just joining together. What are the next steps? You know, this is, you know, this and that or whatever. And so as it turns out, we had to come in, just redo the entire house, right? So obviously we never got the money from her. We sent her kind of away with love, meaning I checked back to see what was going on with her a few months later. And she just was in dire straits. And our Martha had said, well, she ended up being a chronic liar. I didn't know she was lying to me all this time. I'm sorry I brought her into your home, you know. And I said, you know what, Martha? I said, it's okay. I said, these things happen. I said, and if Anna wasn't in such fear and such lack, deprivation, fear in her mind, maybe some of these things wouldn't happen. People are making decisions out of panic, out of fear, out of lack. And our property manager just said, oh my God, I need a dose of whatever you and Mark are doing, because I have never in 30 years of property management seen you guys go through these steps like this and be how you are. She said, I would be furious, and I do not mind telling you that I would be furious, whatever. I said, hey, I don't want to sugarcoat this and say that, you know, we're looking at this with like rose colored glasses. I said, but we just understand the big picture. There are ways that we're in fear. We've, you know, had thoughts and decisions at times where we're like, oh my gosh, I was totally in fear by that. I said, and the thing we can do is just be in the moment and go forward now. And we learned from it. And one of the things Mark and I did learn was just to pay more attention, you know, just, but pay more attention, be more involved, you know, go out and visit your properties. We have another property that's in the East Coast. We're more involved now in the sense that, I mean, we have really, really good tenants there that have been there for years. But it just was a reminder to just, hey, do the normal thing. Don't rely solely on the property managers or whatever. And so probably, you know, $40,000 later, we were kind of back, you know, up and running and everything. So here's the thing. We had insurance, you guys, of course, property insurance and everything. It didn't cover pet damage. We had so much pet damage. And we were like, I don't know anything about that. Mark was like, that's not included. That's like a separate thing. We were just like, we learned, there's too many little details for this time frame, but we learned so many things. And when the insurance people went in and did the assessment, there was so much damage from dogs and stuff like that. So we were like, that's so funny. We didn't even approve dogs. There's like three dogs running around doing all this stuff. I mean, big dogs. So it was just interesting. So, but Mark and I were, you know, I was at the Chorus conference and the irony was not lost on us, you know? And so we thought, I was really surprised because I have to tell you, we didn't react the same. I don't have to tell this audience this or you guys, but for some reason, even all that neglect, looking at the house, the money going down the drain, I have to tell you, we did not stay in the grievance, the worry, as long at all. It's a wonder to behold the healing of the mind that the Course provides, the perspective it provides to reframe and know that we're joined. People's fear is our fear. There's one mind. It doesn't mean you're a doormat. We are not walking around being a doormat in life, but it just means that you're just able to pull back the lens and just the bite is not as strong. And just reframing it, looking at it through the eyes of the Holy Spirit, we were like, gosh, oh my gosh, we have our health, we have this, we have our family, we have this, we have that. We're, wow, gosh, okay. This was a big opportunity, but, you know, we just took away from that just wonderful things. And I think with all the Course provides with healing, all that guilt, attack, conflict, without that in the mind, you naturally connect with the most intuitive, loving response that dictates your behavior. And it has nothing to do with getting revenge, what's right, what's this, what's that. And so it just was really a wonder to behold. And I just, you know, credit this so much. And that's really what I can say. It's just an inner experience of just being able to be at peace. And really, at the end of the day, look at her, that she's not a her. It's not an Anna. I mean, if we're really practicing this, we're like, wow, there's a fractured part of our mind. I'm watching this on a screen. This is part of my movie. Which lens do I want to see it through? Right. And so that's what I can say, you know.
Well, I have a question here. So, in the world of not mixing levels and dealing with the world of form, but through the lens of the Course, mm-hmm. I could see one of, you know, our listening audience reactions of how were you able to let go of all that money? Because money is a very big hook for people. And how, you know, which way brought you to, okay, we're going to release all the money worries in this? Was it because you felt very affluent in other areas that you could afford to let go of that? Whereas some people absolutely could not and would have to figure out how to sue or, you know, the responsible parties. Which you could still do in a Course perspective. What was it that really allowed you to release the huge financial aspect that this brought upon you?
Yes, that's an excellent question. My clients have asked me that and people have asked me that. And it's really twofold. So yes, we were in a position where we didn't need that. We weren't dependent on that. Mm-hmm. But the bigger part of it was, and I really can't put this into words because it's an experience. I just didn't feel the lack. The financial pull was not there as it would have been in the past. And the reason I know that is because when I left Chicago and when my first husband, Tony, and I separated, when I came out here, I went back to one income. I was like, oh my gosh, am I going to go back into broadcasting or advertising? What am I going to do? It was a little bleak. And I still had the fears about money, right? It was very real. And it is a trigger for people, let me tell you. And I don't know, Tam and Matt, why that money thing was healed. We don't know where our unconscious guilt is going to go. Sometimes it's going to go in feeling lack of emotional support from people, lack of love, lack of money for some reason. And again, it's just an inner experience. I didn't feel lack in that way. I was able to let that go because for some reason, all the years of forgiveness, my unconscious guilt did not go to, oh, you're in lack because of these finances. I experienced lack in different ways, like, you know, that other people may not experience or whatever. I had self-confidence issues early on, self-esteem, like this and that, tremendous lack. I mean, there's a lot of people that walk around and maybe they didn't have those self-esteem issues or they didn't have, I mean, we all have something or all of it. And it's really hard for me to answer that because I don't think the answers satisfy people because our unconscious guilt goes to different places. So for some reason at that time, we were just able to let it go. And I thought to myself, something you just said, Tam, too. We were abundant in other areas, like our relationships, our family, our this and that. And yes, we weren't desperate. That does bring in a different piece, of course. But we just kept focusing on what we have, like what we do have, if that makes sense to everybody, you know? It makes
such sense. I'm going to throw in a story here to try and connect the two.
Oh, good.
My son was applying to colleges, and he worked really hard on an artistic portfolio that he had to present, and they were all original pieces, and he worked so hard on it. And right before, the night before his 18th birthday, he went off into the city in San Francisco, and it was in the back of his car that got broken into and stolen. It was in a backpack, and his entire applications were just completely stolen and gone.
Oh my gosh.
And he was devastated. It was like, welcome to your 18th birthday, talking to police and dealing with this.
Oh.
And really horrible for him. And so I decided I was going to go on like a mission to find his backpack. And, you know, figuring that someone threw it out, like they grab stuff, but they'll throw out his portfolio in the garbage. So I went to the area in which it had been broken into, and I started looking in all the garbage surrounding, and it was a really sketchy area. And then I went into a parking lot, and in this parking lot, there were all of these homeless people. But what was weird is that the people weren't there. Their belongings were there. It was like they were out for the day, you know, on the street, panhandling, whatever they were doing. But I started to go through their stuff to look for my son's backpack and the portfolio. And I started to weep with realizing how lucky we were. And the incredible gratitude that started to come over me. And I didn't find his work. But by the time I got home and we're having a big party for him, where everyone we knew chipped in to get him a guitar that he wanted.
Nice.
I the gratitude that I had of, look what we have. Are we gonna mourn for what we don't have? And I'm thinking, like, I'm just wondering if you saw that person, Anna, of, look what she doesn't have. Look at her life compared to what ours is. And do we yes. need to go there to give her more suffering? Do we need to do that? And that compassion that can often be a bridge where you can let go of whatever, what for me, I certainly let go of what it was going to cost in time, in energy, in emotional well-being to for him to redo that. And he got to this party too, and I told him what happened, and he then was given this guitar. And he said, the end of that day, he said, "Mom, this started as the worst day of my life and ended as the best." And we both just were in that place of gratitude for what we do have, not what we didn't. And I wondered if there was a bridge in that to what you guys were feeling and how beautiful it was that you partnered in feeling this, that not one of you felt one way and the other felt the other.
Tam, oh my gosh, beautifully said. That connects it perfectly. That's exactly right. We were looking at Anna and how in fear she must have been and what she didn't have to let that go, and that she felt she had to lie about her son passing, right? Mm-hmm. And what you said about gratitude, that's exactly it. You focus on what you do have. And I have to credit Mark, my husband, who just, when we were joining, I was at the course conference, we were on the phone, and he's just like, "I just feel like we need to give her, offer her debt forgiveness. Mm. We just need her to vacate." And I said, "That's it. Of course." And we weren't even really going after the money hard at all, but we thought, gosh, that's right. Of course, we don't need to do that. And I think, Tam, you're talking about litigation or something like that. Oh my gosh, we got a strong hit to not get into any of that conflict, and that mm-hmm. she was already in enough pain to have let this happen. Mm-hmm. And we did talk to her on the phone, by the way. I forgot to mention this. It doesn't really matter that much, but she had lied over and over on the phone again. And when we talked to her in person, we had originally believed her. And so it was just a wild thing. So we just, like you said, we just were like, well, this is what we do have. And you know, you said you were in tears when you were thinking of that. That's the feeling, how I always say, sometimes you can't describe it, although you did a beautiful job. It's just internal that you don't feel the lack, even yeah. if it's financial. And I'm not saying that people don't feel financial. Goodness me, I felt it. And it's what I'm saying is you don't know sometimes where you're this unconscious guilt's going to go. Maybe it's going to go here. Maybe it's going to go there. And we just did really focus on, you know, what we do have. And boy, I did that in the early years too. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just moving now out to California. I'm going to ask my dad for, I'll ask him for $600 or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, I'm not, you know, I understand, you know, what that is or whatever. And it's just, I don't know. I got a ton of things I've been working on or whatever, but the financial thing just hasn't hooked me yeah. in the same way. Although I have talked to many clients about it. And again, we all have all of it or some of it or part of it or most of it. And it's all really the same, that feeling of feeling yeah. like you don't have enough. Right.
And also, I mean, just to show all the different ways that you can use Course Principles, you know, someone else's path might have been forgiveness and still needing to go through litigation because that's what their guidance told them.
Absolutely.
But with neutrality and love.
Absolutely.
And saying, I need to do this for my own boundaries that I need in my learning because that's how I'm inner directed. So it doesn't mean that every time someone has to say, oh, I forgive all the money, because, you know, that's that lesson, which is beautiful. But there are other lessons where you can say, oh, actually, my relationship and contract with this other soul here is to bring them accountable in a different kind of way, but through tremendous love and care, even though it looks like a lawsuit. So it
absolutely
is. based on where one is at that moment and what one hears in their own inner guidance to do in forgiveness.
Beautifully said. And it's so important. I'm glad you mentioned that. Everyone will receive the guidance, of course, when they're tuning in to what is best in every situation. You're exactly right. The course is nothing if not just being normal in the world. It's just about changing your internal teacher. And one circumstance, litigation would have been absolutely appropriate, right?
And so, or beneficial or whatever.
And beneficial. So there would be no shame in that. This was just our particular experience. And when we joined, what we heard, but oh boy, yeah, it's, you know, trust in your guidance. It certainly would have been another path and another situation to do that for sure. I think it's one of the misconceptions that I hear sometimes about this thought system that can be really challenging. And that's why I kind of inserted in there. It's not about being a doormat. Like, we didn't feel that way. Mark and I weren't, you know, feeling like victims or, oh, we just have to forgive because we're good people. No, I mean, it's it was a different feeling that we had. So that is an excellent point, Tam. And people have to follow the guidance. Yeah, it's the
difference between listening to guidance and feeling gratitude versus spiritual override.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Well said.
And you don't need to spiritually override to be a good person. You have
Correct.
To really just listen to what is right at that exact moment in the present.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Beautiful story. Matt, what's up over there?
You know, what popped into my head was just that expression, turning lemons into lemonade. And I was like, gosh, this seemed like it's spent such a short amount of time in the lemon state and went pretty much quickly to lemonade, where you just add that little bit of sugar so it's more digestible, because you're ready. You're like, you're miracle minded. You got these glasses on, and the inner part of the lens, it says, I'm looking at the world for forgiveness. So this, when this pops up, like, you're kind of primed and ready to see it that way because you're practicing this with Mark, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so hard to digest.
Yeah, it's really something. I mean, I've been devoted, not in an obsessive way, to the course at all, but because I love it. It makes me feel good. It reminds me that I'm connected to source. It's so helpful with my clients and everything to just have the ego out of the way. I've been spiritual counselor for like 16 years now, 2007. And I just, with the ego out of the way, I'm able to help client A with what comes through for client A, client B with what comes through for client B, client C. And some of my clients are Course in Miracles students. Some are not. I have everybody on the spectrum of every possible awareness or place they are in their life. I do have a lot of course clients. It's true. But it's just, we practice it. I feel like, Matt, I don't think I come up with this, but I've been using this term for so long. I don't know where I heard it or minds are joined, but I really wake up in the morning, I frame my day, and I'm miracle ready instead of judgment ready. Now what that means is that I get up and I know, you guys, I know there's going to be forgiveness opportunities, right? I don't walk around with rose-colored glasses. It's just that after practicing for so long, my mind doesn't default to the ego as much, and I default to the Holy Spirit more and more. And what has changed is not that I don't have triggers or ego moments. I just don't stay in them as long. It's the power of the mind. The mind just shifts and reframes and says, oh my gosh, do I want to hold on to this grievance? Or do I want to say, yep, you got this grievance, that this is your classroom. Remember, you came here in the mind, right? This is in the mind. And you know how we always want to help people, all of us. We're like good people. We want to help people. Well, gosh, when you're in the Holy Spirit mind, you're sharing that with everyone, with all minds, because you're one with them. So I always think this is so beneficial. If I'm in the ego and I'm just holding on to grievances, which sometimes, let's face it, we're all like, I'm not ready to forgive. I'm going to have a sandwich, right?
Yeah.
And then it's so important to be honest with your feelings and emotions. This isn't about spiritually bypassing anything. It's about looking at everything and then just not judging yourself, you know? And working through the forgiveness steps, however people, you know, work through them and however they get back to peace, right? So it's never about just, you know, skipping over and everything. But I, you know, do look at the grievances. I recognize what they're for, but I do recognize, thanks to the Course, where they come from and that I have the power, you know, to change my mind. And so it's been with great practice that I, just love to talk, to discuss, to hear about things and share experiences, because again, we're all in this together, aren't we?
Yeah, yes.
Oh yeah.
I'm curious, Jackie, what this, I guess, is our practical question. When you do get thrown off the beam, it seems very real. You've lost your peace. What's the inner dialogue you're telling yourself? Like, okay, this is what's happened and this is how I get back. Like, what are you saying? Like, what's in your mind? What's going on?
Right. Yeah. It's a great question. I guess everybody has their process. These days, I'll give you an example. I'll answer it with an example that happened last night. Oh my gosh. Okay. So Mark he doesn't get really sick that often, but he got really sick. So he's been flying a lot. He's a pilot. He's been flying around, you know, the country, different things. So he got sick. So I thought, you know what? I want to make my homemade chicken noodle soup. Okay. So I'm like, I wanted to get organic, a real chicken, a whole chicken to cut up and put it in there. So I get a little bit uncomfortable. We'll get into it when he's sick. I'll tell you why. I'll try to shorten this in the interest of time. So last night I said to my mother, who's living with us, we moved my mother in about 4 years ago. I said, I'm running over to Pavilions. It's a grocery store. So I'm running over to Pavilions just to get one of their really good chickens. I'm going to do homemade chicken noodle soup, cutting up the onions and the celery and the carrots and the, you know, I've got whatever, my spices and good noodles and everything. So I go there, there's no chicken. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And we were kind of tired from the day because we went to see this healer or whatever, because we were doing this new kind of technology. I know it's called a Therify or whatever. It restores the vitality in your cells and all these other things, whatever. So we drive an hour down to Newport Beach to do this, right? So I was already tired. So I go to Pavilions. There's no chicken. They're out of chicken. I'm like, okay. I go to Whole Foods. There's no chicken. So number one, you guys, I'm obsessed about getting a certain type of chicken. I start to recognize this. I'm like, it's chicken, Jackie, right? So I go then from Whole Foods to Bristol Farms. These are grocery stores, whatever. So I go to Bristol Farms. There's no whole chicken. Nobody in the city of Los Angeles of Ava has a chicken, whatever. So I realize I'm getting worked up and I start smiling in Bristol Farms. So this is my process. I think because of years of practice, you notice it. I start to smile. I go, oh my, I'm so triggered right now. So the guy comes, he goes, I've got chicken breasts here. They're warm, whatever. I go, oh my gosh, thank you. You know? And so I'm driving home and I come in the door. My mom's like, did you get the chicken? I'm like, yeah, I got the chicken, but I went to three places. I was like raising my voice. And then all of a sudden I stopped. I can't explain it. And I started laughing. I go, oh my gosh. I mean, I was not beating myself up. I wasn't trying to not be mad. I just noticed it. It's the noticing that's so different these days, you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I was like obsessing about chicken breasts. And then I was like, let me walk this back. And I realized it was because when Mark got back from Afghanistan many years ago, he got very, very sick and we almost lost him. I rushed him to Cedars-Sinai, whatever. Hospital, there's a part of me that when he's sick, I still, and he's nothing like that. He's not, there's no, he's not going to die. There's no, but there was a part of my mind that's like, I got to get this chicken. I got to get organic chicken. I got to get this. I got to get, he's sick. And I got, and I'm sitting here going, wow, look at that tape playing. Look at that. Wow. Yeah. And guess what? Not only that, but, oh, it's going to be my fault. He's going to be, I'm not going to make him better. Oh, so there's Jackie going back to, it's her fault. She's not, she's taking the blame for that. So anyway, walked all this back, and you don't always have to do that, but it did come into my mind that I was like playing out this script. I'm like, how about that? So my mom and I had a nice laugh about it. And I said, thank goodness for the course, you know. Again, it was just that noticing. And again, it's not denying feelings. It's not trying not to be mad at all. It's just being where you are. But there's a part of my mind now that just notices it quicker, right?
Oh, yeah. So that was that obsession with, if I don't get the chicken right, Mark's going to be sick. But it's not really in conscious awareness. It's like it's kind of dangling there out of awareness.
That's right. Until it came up into my awareness. And I thought, oh my God, it's not my fault that he's sick. Nothing's going to happen to him now. I'm not going to be blamed, right? You're not a good wife. You didn't get the right thing. Why didn't you do this? Listen, you guys, these scripts that go on, you know, it's not us, but this is what we're watching. This is what the ego has created, right? And so I walked it back and I just forgave myself. I forgave that fact that I was obsessed about chicken. And then I forgave the fact that I was thinking that I was so guilty and that I wasn't going to be, I was going to be responsible for keeping him sick. So you just walk all that back. You go, my gosh, how interesting. Right?
Yeah, you know what, to me, it just becomes more and more evident is it's not the one that it's attacking you that's God and love. And it's not the one that's practicing the forgiveness. It's the witness. It's the stopping, the one without the story, the one watching the story. And then, like, you know, the other part comes in to forgive and it's still in story to forgive it, to bring it up.
Story, and to
it and to love it. But really, the place is the witness of where all the love is to let all of it happen.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Do you get that feeling, Jackie? Like you're watching it at once you experience
always.
The forgiveness?
Yeah, okay. Always. And you know, I had that when I was younger and I didn't know what it was. I was kind of always watching things and you have no frame of reference for that. So I just thought everyone, that's just what you do. But yeah, I am aware of kind of dreaming. I don't know how you'd say it. Aware of watching. Mm-hmm. There was a part of me in Bristol Farms last night. I was watching my legs walk over to take the chicken breasts from the guy that he found. I was watching my body going through the motions. I'm like, now I'm going to take out my debit card. I'm going to pay for this. And this is so funny that I was just obsessing about chicken. Oh my God, I did get the chicken, but guess what? It would be okay if I didn't get the chicken, and I'm okay with that. And I'm going to go home and do noodle soup without chicken. Like those types of thoughts, right? It's softening. Yeah.
That watching.
It's the watching. Yeah.
That's the right mind.
That's right. You got it.
Yeah. And I know people are going to be curious, Jackie, when you say, I got a hit. What is that experience? What does that mean for you?
Oh gosh. Yeah. An intuitive hit, a ping, a download, like a thought that comes in, a good thought about it, kind of a reflection of joining, right, with the right mind and being able to follow up on something without the ego interference, which always includes guilt, attack, feeling bad, separation, comparison. I got to do this or else. Yeah. So it's the other side of the mind where you're just, the love is flowing freely. Yeah.
And you can tell the difference because you has a qualitative feel where you're like, oh, this feels totally different than these other thoughts.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because there's no I involved. There's no something that you've done wrong. It's just I think athletes would say it's something like when you're just in the zone. Like I've heard Michael Jordan basketball players say, yeah, the game's being played through me.
Yeah.
It's like that feeling, like Tam was saying so well, you articulated, you're watching. You're just watching the body in action without the investment in the outcome or whatever. You're just doing the what, following an intuitive hit, a ping, you know, yeah, a download. Yeah.
And that ping can also come in the form of one of what we've talked about before is the aha moment.
Yes.
Aha.
Nice.
There it is.
Eureka. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Switch yes. it around.
Well, now
that's right.
I find myself now invested in your answer to this question, Jackie. What is your favorite comfort food?
Well,
you're always invested in that answer.
Yeah.
I got it last night at Bristol Farms because I had to do a little emotional eating when I went in thinking that I had this trauma about the chicken. Mm-hmm. Warm chocolate chip cookies.
Ooh, that's a great one. That's a classic.
And my second one is this thing called Napoleon hats. And my husband Mark and I, and Gary and Sin, and sometimes the family goes up to this place in California, Solvang, an hour and a half from Santa Barbara. It's a Danish town. These Napoleon hats are like shortbread type shaped hats with chocolate over them. Very buttery and very good. Boy, that's an indulgence. And I always get a box of those when we go up to Solvang. Oh my god,
that sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, yes. It is fun. It's yeah. fun if I don't have a sugar crash, so I gotta be careful, but yeah. Those are my indulgences, right?
Oh, that's great.
Oh, Jackie, what wonderful forgiveness story. Thanks so much for sharing with us. Before we let you go, can you give out your website and talk a little bit about your coaching?
Well, sure. And thank you so much for inviting me on. I this is so fun. I really appreciate it and love what you guys are doing. And yeah, people can find me at just JackieLauraJones.com, right? They can email me Jackie@Jackie.news, Jackie@Jackie.news. And yeah, I do spiritual counseling, hypnotherapy. I've done it for a long time. People come from just all walks of life. I work with people where they are at the time. Yes, a lot, of course, students, but everyone else too, people on a different spiritual path. So yeah. And that's it. I'm writing book two right now, so that'll be out. My first book came out in 2018, book one of the Wisdom series. So book two, I hope, will be out this year. So stay tuned for that. I'm loving the way it's coming through. And so we'll just see how that transpires. So I'd like to have it out this year, but as we know, I just give it over and we'll see what happens.
Well, Jackie, thanks so much for coming on Miracle Voices and sharing your miracle voice. All the best to you.
Oh, you guys too. Love you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote, "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."